Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tamara Lee's Trend On, engaging your audience to trend on you, live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central Time. Trend On, featuring guest interviews and current trends from businesses to entertainment to lifestyle topics. And here's your host, the engaging Tamara Lee.
Good morning. Welcome to Tamara Lee's Trend On, engaging your audience to trend on you. I am your host, Tamara Lee, founder of Tamara Lee LLC, a communications expertise company meeting the needs of clients on multiple communications platforms from mobile social and content to image and style consulting. And you can find me at TamaraLeeLLC.com, TamaraLeeIGHLLC.com. I want to thank you for joining me along with my co-host, Heidi Feimster, on the Link Local Network. Heidi is brains and behind the show and co-host and producer, Tech Savvy Gal, managing partner at Manditech LLC. And you can connect with both of us on LinkedIn, Google+, and Facebook, and on the linklocalnetwork.com. And today we have an exciting show coming up. As always, our guest is Judith M. Weigel. She is with Divorce Resource, Inc., Divorce Mediation out of Los Angeles, California. And today we are going to talk about making magic out of mayhem through mediation. And what does that mean? Well, you'll have to stay with us and find out how mediation can help with conflict resolution and how putting control of the mediation process into the hands of the parties is a solution for getting agreeable outcomes for all parties to a win-win situation. So in cases where the boxing gloves are out, we're going to find out how to put the dukes away and get to a win-win situation for everyone. So before we get to Judith, do you have a shout-out to our sponsors, Heidi?
I do, Tamara. We'd like to thank Mediavine Marketing, simplifying social media for successful businesses and professionals through training, consulting, and management. Mediavine Marketing, minimizing your efforts and maximizing your results. We'd also like to thank Manditech, the Chicago area technology company that has the right solution for your business, increasing your visibility and profit with technology. We'd also like to thank ZipBoss.com, a professional business cloud built and maintained by Metasoft, Inc. ZipBoss, create, market, succeed. More powerful websites are born. Thank you, Tamara.
Thank you, Heidi. And I should also say that Tamara Lee's Trend On is one of several shows in the lineup of the Link Local Network. You can check out those shows as well as our show on the LinkLocalNetwork.com. Link Local Network is a networking organization for professionals who utilize social media to promote their businesses and accomplish their goals with a strong local, national, and international following. You can link locally and connect globally at LinkLocalNetwork.com. You can find today's show link as well as our past Tamara Lee Trend On shows as well as my blog post both on my website, TamaraLeeLLC.com, and on the Link Local Network website under radio shows. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Tamara Lee LLC, at Heidi Feimster, and at Linked Local Net. And now that we have all that show business out of the way at the beginning of our show, thank you for hanging in there with us. And we would like to welcome our guest, Judith Weigel. Are you there?
I am, and thrilled to be here, Tamara. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for all the listeners.
It is our pleasure to have you here, because who doesn't have conflict in their life at some point?
It's really true, and just because I work in the field of divorce and family mediation doesn't mean that anything we say in this program cannot apply to any type of contentious discussion that you may be having scheduled soon on your horizon. We can use these techniques in anything we do.
Well, and that's why I thought today we will do and let our audience know that it's a one of two part show. So this week and then next week we'll have you back on. Today we are going to talk about the mediation process as it can apply to a broader general platform, not just in that divorce context. So I'm glad you brought that up because that is going to be the focus of our show today. And then next week we'll have you back, and that will be a show that's devoted more specifically to the area of divorce and working through a settlement agreement and some of those things outside of divorce wars. So hopefully people will come back and join us for the second part. But today we are going to focus on making magic out of mayhem through mediation, and that is a mouthful.
It is. And what does that mean? Here's what it means to me. It's all about communication. The mayhem are actually the words that we choose to use that more throw fuel on the fire and make the fire of your discussion grow larger instead of minimizing the damage and choosing words that allow you to move the heart and mind of the person you're talking to so that you can get what you want. You know, bludgeoning somebody with your language, demeaning their manhood or womanhood, maintaining a victim position, and speaking with disrespect, these are all the wrong ways to achieve your goals in a negotiation, a mediation, or simply a discussion where you vehemently disagree with somebody. It's the way we choose our words, the tone of voice we use, the respect with which we treat each other. That makes for an amicable resolution. Because what you're doing, if you don't treat somebody with respect, even if you disagree with the position they're taking, if you don't treat somebody the way you want to be treated, why should they do what you want them to do? Where's the motivation and the incentive?
Well, and go ahead.
I said, and that's what you have to think about when you choose the words to use.
So one of the things I want to talk about is the respect issue. I know I was living in Germany for a semester teaching English over there with a corporation, and the German mindset is that they are pro-dialogue, pro-conflict, not in terms of you fight, but that it's good to have that more of the marketplace of ideas that we've gotten away from, I think, in the U.S. Public speech arena, of where really you're better off for having differing viewpoints and then discuss those and then be able to talk about them and move parties to why you believe something, why you don't believe something, and then what's the end goal you want out of it. And as you talked about with the respect is one of those key issues. And so maybe we can start there with that respect issue as our first talking point. But I'm going to digress here. Before we get into that, I would like for our audience to just have a little bit of your background. So if you could tell us about you personally and then about divorce resources, that'll give us, you know, kind of a context from where to go for the rest of the conversation.
You know, yes, I will. And respect has always been a very important aspect of all the work I've done because I come from the live entertainment business. I started off by working with the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus. I toured for 6 years with them as a marketing director, a location scout, and lastly, the Dancing Bear, the year I got married to my husband, band leader. And when you're in live entertainment, showtime waits for no man. Mm-hmm. And tempers flare behind the stage because you're working with artists. And all artists, I don't care what field they work in, acting, music, fine artists, we all have our egos. And so to be able to work in an environment like the circus where you have cultures from around the world and everybody has their own way of talking, you have cultural biases, and then you have your caste system. Because within a circus environment, it's like a microcosm of the world. You have your worker laborers, you have your management people, and you have your superstars. And then, of course, you have the animals, which is the most fun aspect, I think. And they have their pecking order, by the way. So
yes,
to be able to work in an environment where everybody's communicating differently, everybody has different ways they express respect for one another, even the animals. You have to be really good at dealing with all of these different levels of expectation and behavior, and then showtime hits and the show must go on, and you're talking about a very dangerous art form, the circus, where you have to trust one another to put the rigging so you don't fall. You have to trust one another that everybody's lined up for security. There's so much reliance on people in a circus environment. It was probably the best starting point for what I do now. But then I evolved into other types of entertainment, got into Los Angeles, worked in the private party industry, where you work with enormously wealthy people who it means nothing to spend $500,000 on a party at their house and maybe $10,000 to $25,000 minimal on entertainment. But the level of expectation is enormous, and the way they communicate their level of expectation is very interesting. You almost have to be a mind reader, that they expect you to be superhuman and to jump through a lot of hoops. And I'm still into that a little bit. It's now my second business, because as I got older, we all have to do this. If the career that we've chosen is changing, which so many industries have changed due to technology, we have to start thinking of, as we get older, what fields will work for us, and value age as a priority. And that just happened to be mediation. And I ran into a few attorney friends that I just made socially that said I had a good personality for mediation. And I think it was because of the way I had to deal with conflict in live entertainment and soothe and fan the flames of disagreement so that we could all work in a very, you know, positive environment and give the public the show they came to see. So I was encouraged to go into mediation by some attorney friends. I researched it, liked it, and started doing all different types of mediations until I met somebody who had a business who was looking at retirement herself. I came in, learned the business of family law mediation and filing for divorce, and that's where I am right now.
I would think your background in the entertainment thing sounds like great boot camp for knowing how to handle all of, one, the pressures, and then really having the end result be a positive outcome for the parties involved. And so, you know, that makes a lot of sense. So thank you for sharing how that came about. How much more has mediation risen or maybe come into the dialogue in terms of an option when you're dealing with conflict resolution, be it in a marriage context or business,
well,
corporate.
Well, now in business contracts, you're going to see mediation appearing more than arbitration. And let me just stop and give you a difference. Arbitration's like a mini court trial. You really don't get to use the process of informal dialogue in an arbitration. But that's all the legal environment knew to do, because that's all they were comfortable with. As the legal environment allowed non-attorneys to get credentialed in the field of mediation, you started seeing more mediation clauses in business contracts, so that before you go to trial, you are required to go to mediation first. So that eliminates the pressure on the court system to hear cases that really shouldn't be there, because that's the only option people used to have. And because mediation has been opened up to non-attorney mediators, and it's good that it was, because non-attorney mediators don't have that fighting mode in them. Lawyers are bred in school to be fighters. Well, that works counterproductively against a good conversation between parties to resolve a dispute. So thank you, legal community, for allowing non-attorney mediators to enter the environment, because now we offer a second option to only dealing with attorneys if you want to resolve disputes. And so now people, citizens, are starting to proactively look for mediators on Yelp, on Google, and then just in discussion with their friends who maybe have tried mediation or are in conflict with some type of dispute, and are using now this other option. And I'm happy to say it's entered the lexicon of people's options, and they are proactively choosing mediation. Now, Tamara, with that, most people don't know how to engage in the mediation process correctly, and there's a way to do it. So should we, maybe we should get to that. Yeah?
As I'm waiting. Okay, how is that?
Okay, cool,
what
cool, cool, cool. So here's how you do it.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Well, we are here to tell you. First thing up, let's go back to respect. The first thing you have to do is set yourself up for treating your opponent, because that's how you're looking at that person when you enter the mediation room. They're your opponent. Stop thinking of it that way. They're just another human being that disagrees with you. Now, maybe they've disagreed with you in a bad way. Maybe you really hate what they've done, brings into question your security about moving forward. But put all of that aside, because A, they're not axe murderers. They're not criminals, typically. Mm-hmm. They're just people who may have done something that thwarted the agreement you've already made. So this is your opportunity to have a full and open discussion with them, with a neutral third party who will guide your conversation forward and stop you at different points where they see that maybe you're agreeing and you're not even noticing that you're agreeing. It's so funny that when we go into offense mode, we don't really hear what the other person is saying. And so often, people are mad when they come in and they just are ready to fight because they don't know any other way to converse, and they miss that they're actually agreeing on some points. So,
and that was then, right, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead. What did you
I was going to say that listening is another component and agreeing on it, but I'll let you continue the thought because you'll probably
No, you're absolutely right. Listening is the biggest issue of all. After respect, you actually move into listening. So you have to go in wanting to treat the other person with respect, because trust me, everybody, when you do that, it doesn't mean you compromise what you want or compromise what you're going to ask for. No. You still do that, but you do it in a respectful way. And then the other person, hopefully, should be willing to listen more. So now listening. It's so hard to listen because we fear, because this is always underlying our issues, we fear that if we don't interrupt, if we don't get in everything we need to get in, any second we want to get in there, we fear that we won't have the opportunity. But actually, if you take notes while the other person is talking so that you don't forget what you want to address, just let that person finish talking, two magical things are going to happen. First of all, the other person is going to be extremely happy that they were allowed to finish their thoughts, and they'll be open to listening to what you have to say. That's kind of part one, but part two of the magic is you, the listener, are going to, for the first time, fully understand where the other person is coming from because you haven't interrupted, which means the other person is going to finish their thoughts. That almost never happens in a disagreement because we're not used to listening. We're not used to letting the other person finish their thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And that, how many times is it you're not hearing what I'm saying? Well, no, you're not listening to what I'm saying. And it's both parties thinking more about what they want to say rather than actually hearing the other person out.
Absolutely, Tamara. And when you listen to the other person, you may still disagree about their theory, their philosophies. You may disagree about the chronology that they've just presented. But at least you've, A, allowed them to get it out the way they see it, because you each see things different ways. So you've allowed them to get it out the way they see it, and because you've let them get it out, they are more open to listening to you back. But you're right. You are so right, because in your mind, while you're listening, you're only half listening. You're already putting up your defenses. Even if you're not speaking, you're already countering. It's so hard to listen. It's so hard to trust that listening will not make you forget what you were going to say, because the big salient points you're going to get to anyway in the mediation. Even if you forget something now, you're going to remember it later on. You really aren't going to forget. But if you take notes while you're listening, you really won't forget. And you'll have an open mind to listening. And so this is a little test. We should give our listeners a little test today. Most of you are going to come into some type of conflict. You may be little, may be big. Why don't we use as our task today forcing ourselves to be quiet and simply listen? And I guarantee you the other person will say, "Are you still there?" if it's on the phone. And you'll say, "Yes, why do you ask?" "Well, because you weren't talking." "No, I was listening." "Oh, is that what it's like?"
It's a novel thing. You know, snoring on the other side. I've now left the party.
if money is involved with something,
all ears.
That's for sure. But yeah, they don't know, because it's so unusual that somebody would really listen.
So then once you get where each side has had their voice and their opportunity to speak with that respect, with the non-interruption, being able to express where their point of view is, what they want out of it, then where do you go from there towards working towards the resolution?
Okay, so one of two things happens. Either the mediator listening will actually listen for points of agreement, and a really good mediator will pull those points of agreement out immediately when both parties are done expressing themselves. And they'll say, "Okay, so here's what I've heard you say and repeat, and here's what I've heard you say and repeat, and look what I heard. I just heard both of you agree on this and this. Do you agree?" "Yeah, I guess so." "All right, now here's where you don't agree." And so you pull those out. "Which issue would you like to tackle first, disputants?" And they will actually choose which issue is more important to them to tackle first. Okay, so the mediator will then say, "So you, party A, disagree about this aspect of the dispute, and you, party B, disagree about this aspect of the dispute. Who would like to reapproach now those disputable things and then offer a suggestion where you go?" And that's where you go. Offer a suggestion, and therein lies the beginning of the negotiation.
And the key thing there that you've talked about of why mediation is a more effective process is because, and maybe you can just touch on the difference of when it's in the courts and the lawyers handling the conflict versus mediation where you're putting it into the hands of the parties.
Wow. Well.
in 2 minutes, no less.
No. What people don't know about the court system is that it is giant gray spaces. And because of those giant, there's no magic formula to so many things. There's no thing about my day of justice in court. That's TV stuff. What court is one attorney arguing with the other attorney, and whoever argues better wins. It has nothing to do with truth and honesty. Nothing. It's a giant debate. And that's the tough part of law, and you have to know that going into it. And if it's not a criminal prosecution, I mean, we're talking about, like, murder, mm-hmm. stuff like that. If it's just civil stuff,
right.
we argue about money and, you know, things that are more common practice among all of us, it really has no place in the court system. The first place it belongs is the discussion between two people. But, you know, once you know the area of law, so you can ask for legal counsel. So what happens in the court system is the parties never get to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely does the defendant, do the defendant and the plaintiff get on the stand. Rarely. So it's so interesting. I've heard this so many different times that you'll go to litigation, you'll get inside the court, both the defendant and the plaintiff will be appalled at the process and become insecure about the process and then ask their attorneys to please pull it and let's go to mediation because this isn't going where we want it to go. That quite often happens. In mediation, you have two versions of mediation. You either have a version of mediation where no lawyers are present representing clients. I happen to love those versions of mediation because if you have lawyers representing you, it becomes another court battle. They don't know any other way to deal with each other because that's not how they've been trained. They've been trained to be fighters. So if you don't want to fight, if you really want to take the fight out of the discussion, it's going to be tough if you have your lawyers there. But a lot of times people are insecure and they don't want to make a decision that is counterproductive to them if they're giving their legal rights away. That's a real big issue with people. Am I giving my legal rights away? Well, here's the deal. There are legal rights and there are those things that you feel are right and fair based on the relationship that's already been in progress, whatever that relationship is. And nobody knows the backstory of that relationship but the people involved. Mm-hmm. So the way I've dealt with lawyers being present in a mediation is I've just stopped them from fighting or I close the mediation down because it's so counterproductive. And the parties themselves get it after a while. They get that their lawyers are chewing up time. The expense of the mediation is growing exponentially beyond what it needs to be, and there's really no resolution. And so the parties themselves start realizing how counterproductive it is if the parties are dedicated to having an open discussion with each other. I encourage the parties, if you want to go into mediation, if it's landlord, tenant, whatever it is, and you want to make sure that you know the lay of the land legally, just talk to your attorney about it. Get some legal advice before you go into mediation. And then go in and have a discussion. Or, and this is something new, Tamara, and listeners, mm-hmm. that I've started because I wanted to change the business model of my company, and then I wanted to support my clients in making decisions that were the most intelligent for them and that were the most aware of the law so that they could then, you know, be creative and not feel like they gave their rights away because they didn't know what their rights were. We're actually doing this at 10 o'clock today. I have people coming in, and we have a consulting attorney join the mediation. So that attorney doesn't represent either party, and that attorney has to say, I can never represent one of you now that I'm being used as a consultant. And so we get the line items already established that the parties want to mediate, and the attorney knows that. And so we let the mediation start with just the parties talking. And when they hit points where, well, we don't really know what the law says, the attorney chimes in and says, here's the full extent of the law, and here's how I've seen it applied if it goes to litigation. That's something new that isn't being done that I kind of saw a need for, and I now am loving this process. Mm-hmm. And it's catching on like wildfire with my clients.
So yeah, I can see the beauty of that.
Appropriately, because you're using their knowledge of the law, but you're not letting them fight.
Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people or parties don't, you know, usually you're coming into a conflict situation, and it is new territory, as you said, where people think it's about truth and justice in the American way, and it's not that at all. To some, you know, theoretically, but in a practical manner, that's not how the court systems work. And yet, when you realize that your mediation process is only going to be guided by what the laws are, the value of having that nonpartisan attorney can really help with that discussion of realizing, okay, here's what the law says. It's just going to be X, Y, and Z, not what you think it should be or how you want it to be. Here's what it is. So I think that's an invaluable resource to have as part of the mediation process. And then understanding people that, you know, an attorney neutral like that cannot then, as you said, be favorited towards one side or the other.
That's right. They can't set either party up with unrealistic expectations of only giving them the best case scenario that they have seen work out. They can only give broad strokes. And I really think this can open up a whole new level of work for attorneys, too.
Mm-hmm.
There are some attorneys, and listen, when you need an attorney, you need an attorney. This is not meant to be attorney bashing at
right.
all.
Right, right.
Because there are some cases where the parties simply can't talk. They're just unable to do it, and the only way they can get through a dispute is by having attorneys talk to each other, and that's perfectly fine. But there's a whole world of people out there that don't fall into that category and truly want to use attorneys for their information and their nonpartisan approach to the law. And I think that there's enough attorneys out there that really don't like litigation. They enjoy law. They enjoy how law was established. They enjoy how law can support a community. But they also see holes in the system that they don't like. And I am doing lots of research on those attorneys who fall into those categories because I think that we can establish an entirely new model for conflict resolution this way, and I'm happy to be part of that new experience.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's really exciting because it takes away the need for – it doesn't take away from the value that the attorney brings to the process, but it doesn't create a situation where the more adversarial an attorney is on one party's behalf, the longer the process goes and the more money they make. And I think that's a lot of people's, you know, hesitation with, gosh, you know, we have opposing interests. I want to get this over as quickly as possible, as inexpensively as possible. And yet you often feel like an attorney's intention, not maybe overtly stated, I don't want to, you know, make blanket statements, but they're in the business of making money, and so the longer they create conflict, the more money they make. So you have two opposing needs and wants out of the process, whereas a mediation with an attorney involved seems like just a win-win also.
You hit the nail on the head in a couple different ways. Not to cast aspersions on the business of being an attorney, but because I am in the process of going to paralegal school right now, I now have a whole different window on how attorneys are taught to work for their clients. And this is a whole discussion separate from this, but just in a nutshell, they are taught to do research beyond what non-attorneys could even fathom they are required to do. Like, for instance, if you're representing somebody in a shoplifting case, you're supposed to actually take words out of the presiding statute in your state on shoplifting and do more research on the words take, remove, and take away. I was blown away when my teacher said, "Well, Judy, you did a really good job on this brief, but if you were really in a situation, you know, if you were working with the attorney or paralegal, you would probably suggest to the attorney that they spend more time, called billable hours, on researching those three words. And I said to my attorney, wait a minute, normal people know what shoplifting is. You intend to go in and take something out of the store without paying for it. Simple end of story.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's what shoplifting is. It doesn't matter how it's done. It matters that you have no intention of paying for it. Or, and this is the funny part of it, we go into a store, who hasn't done this? You go into a store and your mind is on something else. Something's just happened. So you're playing this whatever it is over in your mind and you're kind of only half there shopping. You pick something up and you literally start to walk out the door because you're not even paying attention to what you're doing.
Right. Right.
And then you're almost out the door and all of a sudden you catch yourself, oh my gosh, I forgot to pay. It's real easy to figure out whether somebody's shoplifting or not. And so that's converted, so you do that research. This is how they're taught to work. And so when I do attorney-client mediations for the Los Angeles County Bar Association, because I've been doing volunteer work, because you want to give back to the community all the time,
mm-hmm.
and people have a vehicle when they disagree with their bills from their attorneys, and you can ask for a mediation or an arbitration from the Bar Association. So I've been mediating those disputes for about 4 years. And the biggest issue is people don't understand why their bills are so large. And I only realized it once I got into paralegal school and understood what they are taught to do. So there's a big gap beyond the way they're taught to work, you know, so that they don't do malpractice, so they cover all their bases. But what the legal community considers covering your bases is I believe is different than the non-attorney world believes is covering their bases. I think that our bills are ridiculously high because of this way they're taught. And then the other reason they're ridiculously high is because the world of attorneys is no different than the world of any other business. You have people that are exceptional, you have people that are mediocre, and you have people that are bad. Every occupation. And so, you know, you just have to hopefully only get with the people that are really good.
Mm-hmm. And I think a part of that, too, as you said, it's the perception of what you're hiring that attorney to do versus what that attorney will actually be doing. And that
yep.
kind of comes back to the mediation process of what your perception is. It can be much more closer aligned to the conflict resolution in a mediation situation because you don't have all those other variables at play. You can just focus on here's where we're at, here's where we want to get to, here's the process to go from point A to Z through it. And not that that's a question, it's more of a statement, but I did want to ask you before we wrap up here, and then, of course, looking forward to having you back next week as we talk more specifically. So today was just a great overview. But I do want to touch on, because you're dealing with people and emotions, and the center of who we are oftentimes is what you're having when you first sit down with someone, bringing to the table. How effective is it using humor in that process of some very intense issues?
Tamara, I don't know how to get through a discussion without using humor. And I thank God I have that ability to use humor because you've got to break people's intensity at different times, even when it's the toughest of all cases. You just have to be able to do it. And not everybody can. Not everybody's good at it. I just happen to have a weird sense of humor. And I love to call on pop culture media references in my mediations, because when you can do something like that, you break people, you get people out of their own heads for a second, and that's refreshing. That is really refreshing.
It's almost like taking the lid off
when
the pressure cooker.
You have to remember, you really have to take stock of who you're talking to, and different cultures of people have different ideas of what's humorous and what's not. So it is kind of dangerous doing that, but I do it anyway because it just happens to be second nature with me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's finding the right fit for your mediation person. Wouldn't you think that?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I haven't had it backfire yet. Thank heaven.
Good.
But I am careful about how I do it, too. And you know, and here's the thing with me as a mediator, and I think this works with anybody who's functioning as a mediator. And, you know, people, anybody listening, you are actually in the roles of being informal mediators in your own families. Think about how people come to you in your social network, maybe on the job, or in your own families, because you may be the voice, you may be the kind of person who's the voice of reason. You may be the kind of person that is really slow to anger. And there's a lot of you out there. So you will be the people that are sought after because you probably appear to be non-judgmental people. That's an excellent key to being a great mediator. And I think because I am so non-judgmental about people, I am as fallible as anybody walking down the street. And if you keep that in mind, you can't be judgmental about people. And I think the mediation participants get that. They get when they're dealing with somebody who has a kind heart, who just wants to help, who's not going to be judgmental, and I think that kind of person will have their humor accepted because they care. They care about the people in the room. And I know people can tell that. I know that comes out of us.
Yeah. And I think that's the balance of not just mediator's personality, but, you know, the skill and the training that they've had and knowing how to create that safe environment and bringing that out in each party. And I'll ask one more question, then we'll wrap up here and then have you back next week. But is it valuable in those situations maybe to do some role-playing and ask a party? What's the best advice you would give yourself if you were listening to your side of it?
God, Tamara, you're a really good mediator. You could start doing this yourself.
Okay, we'll talk after the show. I might need a job. No.
Yeah. No. That's absolutely a fabulous aspect, and I like to bring in role play. You know, first of all, I come from an entertainment background, so I've got that. You know, I've performed on stage, so I have that ability to kind of do that and be malleable. But anybody can do this. When you ask a participant to switch roles, if you were the other person and you looked at the issue from their point of view, how would you approach it? That is so unbelievably valuable, because once you can walk in somebody's shoes, once you can look at a dispute from a different point of view, from a different set of eyes, you've just opened yourself up to unique resolutions that you would have never thought of otherwise. And also, you get to see yourself in a different light, and you get to see the other person in a different light. And that's where the magic is.
Yeah, we have two people, the one that we think we are and the one that other people see.
That's right. Exactly right. And we are those two people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and maybe it's your LA-based location, but, you know, as you were talking, too, I was thinking, even with the humor and things, you know, it's really what makes a great script is that you have all those moments that touch on all of the different emotions, and then even in the most dramatic of films, when that tension is to the point of where, you know, you're just all uptight and you're on the edge of your seat, then usually it's followed by a lighter scene, a moment of levity that releases some of that tension and pressure. And so if you can, you know, go through your process that way with knowing that's part of the ebb and flow of getting through the dialogue as well. And that, again, not that that's a question, just a thought as I was listening to you that might be valuable for our listeners. So next week we will have you back. Why don't you give a shout-out to where people can get a hold of you in the meantime, hopefully with any questions or more information on the process, and then we'll have you back next week and talk specifically divorce conflict.
That would be great, Tamara. Yeah, even for some communications coaching, because that's what we do here as well. We actually show you how to communicate in a different way so that you can go back to your own informal conversations and maybe handle it differently. So we can be reached either by through our phone number, which is 310-441-7555, or through our website, which is www.adivorceresource.com. adivorceresource.com. I had to add the A because divorceresource.com was taken by another company in another state, mm-hmm. and I still like the name for California, so adivorceresource.com.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. I'm glad you pointed that out because, if we just Google divorce resource, it might not lead us directly to you. But
Wonderful company in Massachusetts.
Well, see, you've got the bi-coastal points covered. We'll have to see what we can do about a Chicago location.
There you go. There you go. Tamara, thank you so much for having me. I love talking about this subject, and I appreciate the opportunity to do so today.
We're very thankful for your time and your knowledge and expertise and sharing it with us. It's been a delight, and I can't believe how fast it went. So I look forward to having you back next week and continuing the conversation. All good stuff, very practical. On a daily basis, we can learn from the points that you've given to us. So thank you very much, and we will talk next week. Have a great week.
Have you too. My pleasure, and talk on, listeners, talk on.
There you go. So thank
you. Bye-bye.
All right, and as I said, next week on Tamara Lee's Trend On, we will have Judith Weigel back with Divorce Resources next week. So join us. If you have any questions, you can call into the show at 1-323-580-5755. And before we sign off here, as we usually finish, with a Tamara Lee's Trend On fashion, with our California-based location, this week trending was Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival, which was all about what's going on with the music festival. And as we begin, although in the Midwest it's still snowing, but we are ever hopeful that we will be out in the festival season of music and concerts and outdoor things. And so the trend on fashion is what to wear when you are out at a music festival. And I will repost an article I wrote last year for ThirdCoastDaily.com, and you can find that under ThirdCoastDaily.com, Tamara Lee, author of Threads, Stepping Out This Summer in Style. And two of the things that I will start off with that you want to pay attention to when you are dressing for a music festival is comfortable shoes and your accessories. So it all starts there. Who hasn't been that person walking around with your shoes in your hands because you just wore the wrong pair of shoes for the longevity of an event? So when you think about festival fashion, think first about your shoes so that you can keep up and dance the night and days away without taking a beating on your feet. So think about your shoes. And then the second important aspect to festival attire would be having a bag or a backpack or pockets on your garments so that your hands are free, that you're not bogged down by carrying a lot, but you can keep those important essentials from your wallet, sunglasses, cell phone, sunscreen, etc. So those would be the two key things to think about in the first place as you step out in style for summer festival fashion. So thank you for joining us today on Tamara Lee's Trend On, and we look forward to having you back with us next week as we continue the conversation on making magic out of mayhem through mediation.